This week, we spam Hillary's email server. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 81. Today is March 13th, 2015. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
This is Rob.
Hey, it's Friday the 13th again.
Again.
What does that mean?
Global warming.
It's like Groundhog Day. It's just the same episode over and over again.
That is a great movie, by the way.
It was. It's an awesome movie.
Still is.
I heard it referenced on the Dave Glover show as being popular with Eastern religions.
Why?
Yeah.
It's a little bit of like kind of a reincarnation story, right?
Yeah, it is.
And think of it that way. And he does kill himself a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
Rob.
I know. Sorry. Sorry, listeners.
If it were even vaguely political, we could talk about it in our At the Movies episode, which, by the way, is coming up.
Oh, it is?
It's either
right. First we heard of it.
Hey. It's either May or June.
May or June.
I think the only movies I've seen have been Smurfs 2.
Very political.
I'll make you all watch The Lorax for environmental reasons.
I already watched Wall-E for environmental reasons.
Dr. Seuss banging that drum hard, man. It's just hitting it.
So this episode, Jeremy is taking the lead.
I'm taking the... I don't know if I'd call it a lead. It's
all right, so he's going to be the target.
Yeah. I had a lot of things on my mind.
Yeah?
And that's pretty much where they stayed, but... things I want to talk about. Netanyahu's speech to Congress. The Hillary Clinton email scandal, which Jerry so... eloquently referenced in the intro.
Yes.
Net neutrality.
Hey, leave the rest as like teasers. You want to give them a table of contents.
Right,
who knows
fine.
What topics three
oh,
and four
who knows
might be.
What will come up. Hey. Oh. We might not even have four topics.
We're crazy like that. You just never know what we're going to talk about.
Oh, and before I forget, tomorrow, Pi Day.
Yes.
It's the Pi Day of the century because we can take it out to 9 decimal places.
That's
tomorrow.
Right. Tomorrow is 31415.
And at 9:26 and either 53 or 54 seconds, depending on your school of thought.
Yes, we should all eat pie.
Yeah.
Rob's
sitting there clueless because he doesn't...
We did today, in fact, in the office. We brought in pie.
Had
about a dozen different varieties of pie.
We had pizza yesterday because there was a conflict today. And so.
Okay. So my wife made a pie for me to take into work today, and she also made a secondary backup pie for us to have tomorrow. So,
I noticed you didn't bring any tonight. Thank
I did
you.
Not.
All right.
I'm
Do you guys
sorry.
Know about Mole Day?
Oh, yeah.
Mole Day?
Avogadro's number?
Oh.
6 point something times 10 to the 23rd, right?
Yeah.
Bam, nailing it. October 23rd is Mole Day.
All right.
Anyway, back to Netanyahu's speech.
Can we stop geeking out for a minute?
I found this whole situation interesting to me. I don't know what the general rules of engagement are on inviting a foreign leader to speak to Congress. I've never really thought much about it. I don't know that it happens that often.
Seems kind of like a new thing, right?
I don't know if I'd call it new either, but...
Uncommon.
Uncommon. Let's say uncommon. Although in his speech, he said it was the third time he had done that, so that seemed like a lot based on...
I mean, it's uncommon enough for the president to address Congress, right? So for a leader of another country to come address Congress, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. So... The point is, I've seen this as a new low in partisan bickering. Because it was like a major stick in the eye to Obama that they were, the Republicans were inviting him to speak.
Right.
I also see this as Republicans wrangling for votes, trying to woo the Jewish community. If you, I pulled up their voting record, and when I say they, I didn't mean to sound whatever you want to call it, but the Jewish voting record in presidential elections from 2012 all the way back to 1916, let's just say there's a slight trend of supporting the Democrat who's in the running.
Yeah, it's more than slight.
It's more than slight. It's way more than slight. So why...
Except for 1920, which was interesting to me, that the Jewish vote was split between the Republican and the socialist candidate.
But even then, it was double... Each one was essentially double of the...
The Democrat.
The Republican candidate. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I missed... Okay, I'm sorry.
So, yeah, that was kind of an anomaly, because all the other years, it seems like they were overwhelmingly Democratic, but...
I don't know. So, the point is, what is really happening? I think the Obama administration has... They've tried to brand it as anti-Israel. That's... I feel like that's one tactic that has been used quite a bit throughout his administration.
Terry Bram, what is anti-what?
Obama. They're trying... the Obama's adversaries are saying he doesn't support Israel.
Sure, right,
he's,
right.
He's alienating them. He's hanging them out to dry. He's doing whatever. He's endangering Israel. If you do a little bit of research, he's actually supported them in the background heavily.
Yeah.
Doubling budgets for some of the weapons programs they have. Yeah. What's it called? David's Sling, I think, is one of the major ones. He doubled it from like 51 million to 160 million, or not 106, excuse me, 110 million. Another weapons system, the Iron Dome, he's supported heavily. But on the surface, I can see why that it's, he's been branded this way. Because it does feel like he's at odds with them in the news, or his statements are at odds with Israel, and
just for not being as hawkish as some would like. Or?
I don't think hawkish is the right word. I think admonishing them based on their maneuvering in the situations they face. More so than other presidents. That's the impression I have. I don't, maybe, clearly, neither
well,
of you see.
Well,
but
well, so the curious thing to me is, well, first of all, you know, they broadcast Netanyahu's speech live in Israel on tape delay. Did you guys hear this?
No.
Yeah, it was tape delayed because, you know, there's law there that you're not allowed to campaign on the major media.
Okay.
2 weeks prior to an election, and so they were afraid he was going to get political in his speech, so they wanted to be able to, you know, pull the plug on it in case he said anything that.
But I mean, just the fact that there is a speech has political.
Right.
I mean, he's not deaf to the fact that the election's coming up for them.
Right, sure. And that's why I'm wondering who architected this. Was this somebody in the Republican Party in Congress, or was this actually somebody in Israel that said, hey, it would look really good if you would, you know, go to the U.S. and give a speech right now and, you know, kind of strengthen those ties.
Right. But strangely enough, so far the reports have been that it's actually hurt his popularity in Israel.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that either. Interesting.
I guess, and overall, just because, allow a second to bash Republicans, is
my eyes were rolling. If you didn't hear that, my eyes were rolling.
Right. I'll allow a second. Did you enjoy that? So, I mean, it also comes a little bit into the letter they sent to the leaders of Iran, you know, the Republicans.
So
I think there's a little bit of there's a part of the Republican Congress that I would say, let's call them the mature, sensible ones, or the establishment ones. You know, your Boehners and your whoever's, your McConnell's.
I think sensible is overplaying let's go with it.
Sensible. You know, that are trying to, kind of basically operate Congress like they used to do it. And then there's a section in there that just wants to kind of stick in their eye, you know, on whatever the issue is. They don't really care if they're violating protocol by sending a letter. It's, you know, who am I offending? Oh, Joe Biden, Obama, and John Boehner. My three favorite people to, you know, offend. You know, so it's like, oh, now Netanyahu wants to come and maybe stick one in the president's eye? Oh, you know, who's it going to offend, right? Yeah. Establishment Republicans, establishment Democrats, and the president. So let's do it. You know, it's kind of like, it's like Animal House in there. Just do whatever you want to do.
You brought up another item I had on my list under the... I had this under the Netanyahu speech, but really that should have been the subtext of, has partisan wrangling reached a new low? And that I include that letter as part of this new low, that they sent it. Not sure how I really feel about whether they sent it or not. I mean, it's, to me, it's goofy, because that could happen with anything.
Right.
That's how
it's kind
our
of
government works. You can make or repeal any law.
Right.
Right. So maybe we should elaborate on what you're talking about for listeners who aren't familiar with it.
Or me.
Or, well, all the, you brought it up, Rob, that it was, what, 70 Republicans signed this letter they sent to Iran saying, this nuclear deal you're thinking about making with this administration isn't going to last because the next president can void this whole thing.
Right, and then it needs two-thirds of the votes of Congress, as if it was a treaty, like every agreement is a treaty. It was a little bit ill-formed ideas there.
Yeah, and they're defending it by saying, well, we just wanted them to know how our government works. We were not saying anything wrong. We were just pointing out to them how our...
And why would you do that, you know, other than for political gain? Because,
right.
I mean, it's not like we have this long-standing friendship with the government in Iran, you know, that we're just, oh, hey, by the way, man, you might want to reconsider, you know. I think it's very poor judgment to involve a country as volatile as Iran in our dirty political laundry.
I agree.
I don't know.
And I think that's why I saw that as a new low.
Well, and I think the new low comes from, for lack of a better term, the kind of this Tea Party faction that... that's not a great term. But
no,
there's a section of Congress that they feel they were sent there to violate protocol, to stop the government, to stick it at Obama no matter what the issue is. It doesn't matter. He likes broccoli. Broccoli's communist. You know, whatever their job is to go. They're not there to pass laws or to understand protocol or understand the way the House of Representatives passes laws and how you move a bill through the committee or how to respect your elders, you know, your Jesse Helmses that have been there. Like, that's not why they're there. They're there to blow it up. So they'll do whatever it takes to blow it up. That's what it's, and it, if it's embarrassing, if they do it wrong, if they violate, you know, kind of foreign policy protocol, who cares, you know? The only point is to offend and block and stop. They're not pushing a real agenda of any kind. They're just blowing up Obama. That's their role.
You want to be careful how much you say that.
Oh, yeah. Right. Not blow up.
It's all right. The NSA is already listening to our show. So.
All right. More listeners. More fans. Well... Yeah, I don't know how much, you know, how...
That's how I see it.
Down we can go with this, but... Why... Rob, why do you... I don't feel either side is better or worse than the other on this. And you brought up, well, let me take this opportunity to rail on the Republicans. And then you brought up the Tea Party as, well, this, their only job is to block and blah, blah, blah. Why... Do you see this? I've never understood this about you.
Oh.
Why do you still feel that one side is better than the other. I still feel like both sides are equally bad. Democrats, Republicans. Equally bad. As far as their tactics, what they're trying to do, somehow that, and I can admit that, and I don't believe you can, and I've never understood that.
I don't know. I don't know. My partisan friends who are listening, I mean, they could ponder this themselves, but there are certain, like, I won't say, like, about tactics and political, you know, dealings and lying to the public and all. Like, I do think all those things are equal, but, like, I guess it's about whatever gets your goat, you know. And for me, I find myself to be a centrist liberal, or maybe not even a liberal. What I think to be centrist is in a Republican George Bush type environment shows up as liberal. So I don't really feel like I'm really that far left. But because that's my tendency, the super far extreme left is easier for me to kind of dismiss and kind of like brush away. I'm like, whatever, you silly code pink Occupy Wall Street types, you know? Like I feel like they're like one of my own. They're like the silly uncle at the table, you know? Like, whatever, ha. Old Uncle Bill, they're, you know, banging drums in the drum circle.
Until he crashes the car through the front window and kills half the family.
And so I'm more highly attuned to certain things that are conservative specific about the movement. Like, I don't think there is a Tea Party equivalent in the Democratic Party. I think you got your far left and you got your centrist left. You have your establishment Democrats and you have your people who are completely against the establishment, which you'll see somewhat in the whole Hillary Clinton chat over the next forever, you know, whether you know, you have, yeah, so you have those fights. But you don't really have this sort of Tea Party thing where I just don't, you know, where you have these massive funders who are there to pick candidates that have no experience that they can fund and destroy,
like,
their other
Obama.
Candidates. Don't get me started. They can. Their whole job is to destroy the establishment candidate, vote the way their funders want to do it. They don't care if they know how to make a law or understand,
like,
foreign
Barack
policy
Obama.
Or what Iran is or even where it is on a map. Your job is to go there and screw Obama. Do whatever it takes to stop whatever he's doing. If he wants to do it, say no. That's all you have to do. You're my robot. Go do that. I don't think there's not a Democratic equivalent to that. Now, if you're saying, okay, so are you saying that extreme liberals are somehow like more benign or more benevolent in their wishes than extreme conservatives? No, I completely don't think that at all. But I'm just more highly sensitive to things that are unique about the extreme right.
So it's the willingness to engage in scorched earth policy.
Right.
On the right.
Right, which is very much a last 6 years kind of thing. I mean, it's a new phenomenon. It's the world we live in. The Republicans have taken control of the Congress largely on a message of, let's stop Obama. That's the message. And I've heard that before. You Democrats don't have any platform other than blame W. You know, we've heard that before, right?
Okay. Yeah.
But I think the purpose of the Tea Party and the stated goals of Mitch McConnell when Obama took office is our goal as a Senate is to stop Obama from doing anything. That was the goal. And so that's their job. And so if they do that, hooray, that's all that matters. And I see that to be unique. Maybe is that not unique? It seems unique. I don't think one is motivated by good and truth.
I'm going to make this comment, but I'll preface it by saying I don't personally believe this. Okay, but I could see how some on the right would say, "Well, of course the Democratic Party doesn't have that faction, you know, within their ranks, because that's what the media does, right? The liberal bias in the media takes that role on, and."
Do you agree, resident conservative on the podcast?
I have not thought about it that way, but I would agree there's a there's an opportunity there, yeah.
Such a cop-out. Oh, God.
You're telling me I'm...
No, the whole media thing.
Well, I don't
rail against...
There
so,
wasn't...
Go ahead.
Fine, Rob, you're right. There is not a faction in the Democratic Party that was in there just to stop the opposition. It was the whole Democratic Party. It wasn't a faction. That's all they wanted to do. Whatever Bush is doing, oh, let's stop that. Whatever he's trying to...
So Rob's just going to say, well, at least they're united.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey.
Oh, hey, they're united. Oh, great.
It's like that comedian that used to do the bit about how his dad could never say anything bad about anybody. He's like, oh, yeah, Dad, what about John Wayne Gacy? Killed 33 people and buried him under his house? And his dad would say, well, he's not lazy. And he's a homeowner.
That's hard to argue with that. Yeah, so, I don't know. I don't know, Rob.
I don't know, Jeremy.
I don't know, Rob. But back to the speech, Netanyahu's speech. One of the headlines I saw was that, I wrote it down here, what do they say? Pelosi was nearly in tears the whole time. And it wasn't because she was so passionate about Israel. It was because this was an offense to her. So...
Right.
How do you? Was I don't. You, know, how do, I, don't right. I can't reconcile that. Like,
I think you have to realize, like, someone like a Pelosi, like her entire being is a political being. Like, there is no anything else.
Right.
You know.
Right. She doesn't turn it off when she goes home at night.
Right. Well, and that's her whole role. It's not like oh, I have this mission, and I will use government and politics to achieve my mission. No, the mission for people like a Pelosi is politics. That's what, you know, so, yeah. Oh. Okay. Is she going to retire yet?
I hope so, because...
Yeah, let's help.
Well, let's talk a little bit. Let's hijack your show, Jeremy.
This is not my show. Please, hijack away.
I mean, I think, I'm looking forward. I've been a little bit disengaged on the politics recently, but, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how the Democrats deal with their establishment issues. Hillary being, like, I guess the big one, you know, like it's time to get rid of some Pelosi's and some Harry Reid's. Go on about your business.
Oh, please, if
and
only.
your Hillary Clinton's, you know. I think Hillary Clinton and her primary is going to represent a fight in the Democratic base about whether it's time to move on or not. Please,
tinfoil,
and
get
yes,
your tinfoil hats ready.
Wow. Oh, you got one? Uh-oh.
This email scandal.
Yeah.
Oh! You have a conspiracy.
An inside
about it?
Job to How get so? Her to sweep her out. There you go.
Oh! Oh, so...
Everybody knows this stuff is going on all the time. It's not like, ooh, we just discovered
and,
this is happening.
Oh,
it's,
I'm a believer now.
We have a library... We have a library of things on people.
Right.
And when it's time... need that whatever that little piece of dirt is,
because who knew
who
put her in the position of Secretary of State and knew how she was handling her communications? The young guard, right?
Ooh, I like it.
I'm a believer. I hadn't thought about it, but you earned your money tonight.
Hey, and I'm finished.
All right.
Now I'm not so much a believer. I mean, it's a little early.
That was short-lived.
I mean, if you now that I think it's so good, I mean, if it really was that good, wouldn't you hold on to it? I mean, everybody's compiling their book, right? I mean, everybody knows she's going to run. Everybody's getting their book ready, you know. And don't you save your like Trump cards? I mean, maybe
they got something bigger than that.
Maybe they have something. Bigger.
Maybe they're
I mean,
shot.
Maybe they're
shot over the bow.
Yeah, this, you know, they led with their two of clubs, but
chopping down a tree, you don't just hit it once and watch it fall over. You got to cut a wedge and
like,
then hit it from the other
this
side.
This is like once she's thinking about running. Like, bam, we know you're there, buddy. Ooh, I like... All right, now I'm a believer again.
All right, good.
Somebody order Rob a pair of flip-flops.
Right. Before Rob changes his mind, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we will We'll talk some more about Hillary and a few other topics that Jeremy has brought to the table tonight. So stay with us. So Hillary set up her own email server.
Well, wait a minute. Bill Clinton set up the email server.
Okay.
That's fair, why it
fair
was
enough.
So secure. It was from
her
when he
husband,
was president.
Former president Bill Clinton set up an email server at their home. And that's not the only domain either. They have several. Chelsea even has her own domain, which I thought
I
was kind
not
of
set
funny,
up
but
that domain.
So, my question is: does the government have a law or a regulation or even a formal policy where this is concerned, or has it just never? It's never been addressed in the past because it's never been an issue, right? Is this...
No, I think there's a formal policy.
Okay. So, if there is, why does she get an exemption from that policy?
She doesn't. She will, eventually. They will obfuscate, deny, change the story,
well,
straw
they,
man
they
enough
say,
until it just goes away,
well,
like
they
every
say,
other scandal.
Well, she's saying that, I had this personal account and I only used it for personal things.
But that's been demonstrably false.
Yes.
I mean, there's...
She's already admitted it wasn't only personal things. It was, but, we didn't send any classified information. You're the Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Most of the things
Most
you do
things,
are probably
right.
classified on some level.
Yeah, so I'm just curious, how does she justify, like, the first time... She creates this email address, and the first time she sends what she knows to be official business using that email address, how does she justify that? Even in her own mind, how does she justify that?
She probably did it. There was a credit card offer, so she used, I'll just make a new email. That way I don't get spammed in my
right.
other email. You know, we all do that. And
right.
then accidentally sent...
She wanted to sign up for a Groupon and didn't want to get spammed.
I'm so on Rob. I'm sure you'll get a kick out of this because you'll claim it's there's that outrage again. But on some level, I'm just disgusted with this kind of behavior because it's obviously against protocol.
Right.
Yet they do it time and again,
right.
and then when it finally comes out, they act like they didn't know.
Right.
And what do we always hear? What do you hear about the IRS if you get audited? Well, ignorance is no defense.
Right.
So why is it a defense now? Or it will be for a little while, and then slowly little bits and pieces that she can no longer deny come out, and then it's another story that's layered on top. And then,
right.
like the IRS emails. Well, somehow hard drives were lost and blah, blah, blah. Now, months later, well, they turn up again. But nobody cares because that story is nine right. months, a year old, however old. So they turn up when the heat's off.
Right.
Nobody
so,
cares anymore.
So I think, I hope there's nothing that's really significant in this whole thing. But it could, I mean, to me,
why?
It seems,
because you want her to be president? You.
God, I don't know. No. Remember the podcast plan. I will not vote for Hillary.
Yeah, he will.
No, I won't.
Three times.
We all us Democrats get three votes. You know, it's easy. You just sign up for a separate email account, you get a separate voter ID. I don't know how hard it is.
You just rotate your names.
Right,
your last right. name becomes your first right. name. And
thank
it's easy.
You, Mr. Hillary.
Right. But I think the purpose, the take-home lesson, as you remember, we all have, in our modern Twitter era, we have a very short-term memory on this stuff. This is just like, it's like dropping a little seed in the bucket about Hillary being an insider that doesn't follow the rules and will kind of pull strings that not everybody can pull, and she's kind of untrustworthy in that way. It's like, and now I'm starting to believe your conspiracy. I mean, it's just like, I mean, is anybody not going to vote for Hillary because she used two email accounts? People don't even understand the two email accounts. It's
right.
not a thing, right? But it's just like, oh, and there's one more thing. Boink! And now 2 weeks later, there might be another one. You know, it's just building the case.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the point you made, Jeremy, about when will we, as, you know, the American people...
When have we had enough?
When will we stop tolerating this and allowing scandal after scandal?
Especially with the Clinton name. It's just one mess after another.
Yeah. God, I'm believing your theory now. Because as a centrist Democrat, like, we just get so tired of having to defend the stupidity all the time, you know?
Right.
It's like we're trying to get our point across about whatever Obamacare is or whatever our policies are. But we got to defend, like, well, Bill Clinton just had a moment with a cigar. You know what I mean? Yeah. You just get sick of doing it all the time.
And now the blue dress is coming back in because of his presidential portrait. I'm sure you heard about that.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah. I kind of think that's a real D-bag move on the painter's part.
Well,
that's true.
And it's a stretch, really. I mean, did you look at the portrait?
Yeah.
It's
I can find it.
Well, I mean, there's a shadow off to the left side of it that he claims is supposed to represent a person standing there.
Oh, I thought it was supposed to represent the dress hanging, just the dress, like, hanging.
Well, okay, whatever.
But, anyway,
it could be anything. You look at it, it's just this, you know, blob of paint,
right above it, there's a
color.
Plant, so it could be the shadow from this plant.
I'd be more offended that they painted him a little chunky. He wasn't that big, was he? Anyway.
What? Yeah.
He was?
Well, apparently, he doesn't have his wedding ring on. That was
oh, another, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read that, too.
So, we're getting way off the... But it's... No, I saw her... When she was talking about it, well, this was set up during my husband's administration for his secure communications. Right. I saw that as throwing back to, remember this guy you liked a lot?
Yeah,
it's okay
right,
again.
Right.
Oh, Bill, did it for Bill? Oh, that's
yeah.
good.
Just get
oh,
yeah. So, yeah, you get like, so sick of it. And that's what I envied about the George W. era. You know, we had to fight through all of that stuff with Bill. You know, it's like, oh, I can't wait to pull the dirt on W, you know? And then he didn't give you anything, you know, because he's not drinking and he's choking on a pretzel or whatever. You know, like, come on. And that was one of the fears of the Obama presidency. It's like, oh, no, you know, now we got this new guy and he's going to, like, hump some chick in the White House again, you know? But he's been aces, too, like, sweet, you know? But I think it was such a striking change. Going from Bill to W, like yeah, you might you know, talk like an idiot in relation to the Iraq War.
That's
but
what
you
I was
know.
Gonna say. Unfortunately, they had his gaffes to fall right. back on, and somehow Joe Biden's gaffes, which to me seem equally bad in many cases, they don't get the same attention. Maybe because he's just the VP.
Vice, yeah, right.
yeah.
But when Dan Quayle was VP, that stuff was all
his,
over the place,
were...
and they were no worse than Biden's.
I don't know. They were more comical. Dan Quayle had a flair for the comedy.
See, that's my point. Somehow it's...
Well, it's the difference between questioning one's intelligence versus questioning the other's judgment.
Right. Oh, you just win the Podcast Genius Award. That was beautifully well said. Like when he told, when Biden had the handicapped guy, stand up, you know.
Oh, God bless you.
Right. Whereas that's just poor judgment, you know. And then with the quill quotes, they're almost like out of like a comedy routine.
Well, how is that poor judgment that you ask a guy to stand up who's handicapped? That's not intelligence.
It's just he didn't see, and then, oh, no.
He was acting like he knew that they were best friends. They were lifelong colleagues.
And his latest one where he's giving some gal a back rub while her husband's getting an award.
The old creepy Uncle Joe.
Yeah. Like, really? Can we keep him locked up in his office for the rest of your term, please?
Yeah, I don't know how, I feel like this is not unique to the Clintons now, that any scandal doesn't seem to sink people the way it used
right,
to.
Right, right.
And I brought up Gary Hart, you know, he challenged the press, I dare you to find, well, so they snap a picture of him with, was it Donna Rice, sitting on his lap on a boat.
Right.
And done, torpedoed his whole career immediately.
Yeah, you're right. The standards have changed.
They have.
Because what's his name? Anthony Weiner.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really? I just couldn't believe when we, you know, heard from him again. It's like, what are you doing? But he actually got a little bit of traction for a while there.
Yeah.
And
now the lady he was sexting with, now she's become somebody to talk about. And just recently I heard, oh, she's sexting with somebody else now. Like, he's not the story. She's become a celebrity out of that story. Where are we going? What are we doing?
No, you're right. I mean, there's no higher standard anymore for the people that we elect to represent and lead us. It's just, you know.
I don't know if I'd call it a more serious note. We've all experienced protocol with communication and how, we'll say, secure communication or something, and how it is hammered in that you do not mix these things. You know, this,
right.
But yet somehow people in higher positions that are dealing with things a lot more important, theoretically, no big deal.
Right.
They cross the streams.
That seems kind of weird.
Oh, well. How does that... that doesn't add up to me.
To go ahead and feed your conspiracy theory, it's not this particular thing. It's a good one. But it's got no pictures. It might not be relatable. People might know, you know, that maybe the common public might not know about the protocols of, you know, secure communications and how to handle classified data, whatever it is, you know. So it's like this is a good one, but it's like it's got no legs, you know.
Yeah.
And so maybe this is a perfect one for, you know, this is page one, you know. You can't wait for page two, but it's
maybe.
And it seemed like she was trying to. She tried to. Essentially act like it was kind of a non-issue, right? She didn't really address it.
Surrogates went out there. That's the playbook.
Right. But it seemed like it might have caught her off guard that she had to actually go and, like, talk about it, you know, because it had more legs than she thought, you know? Maybe that's because we're all bored, though. The politics now is a little bit boring. Is it boring? It seems boring.
Wow.
It's monotonous. But
it's always
to me.
This time, right? Between the midterms and the next major election, there's not much going on, so.
And here's the other. The Jeb Bush. So a couple years ago, there was talk, I think he's going to run. Well, Barbara comes out, no, we don't need any more Bushes in the White House. And he's saying, no, I have no interest in running. But now, a couple years later, well, yeah, I mean, maybe it'd be all right. Then a couple years, yeah, I'm going to run. What do you think? You know, let's start probing the polls and see what's going on. I guess that's how you have to do it. But to me, I see that as it's just the typical playbook now. Right. And so when I hear that first denial, like, oh, great, this idiot's right. in. Because right, they, right. they've already taken step one of denying any right. involvement.
And I often think, like, is there any reason to say you're not going to run?
Well, like, if the party tells you to say that.
Right.
But most that's what I always think. When somebody denies they're going to run, it's like, well, okay, you're doing that now because the party's telling you the timing's not right yet.
Yeah.
Right.
So you have to.
But like when I think of, like, the Biden, like, there's always the talk of whether Biden's going to run or something. Like, what is in it? What does he gain by just saying, no, dude, I'm old. I just wanted to ride my Amtrak train. You know, there's nothing. Because the more you're in it, you know, you get the press attention. You get a little power. You get a little money, you know. Like you might as well just string them along as much as you can. By the way, I'm thinking about running. I'm considering it in, the next election for president.
Well, and that's, again, that's where I think the party steps in and says, well, if they let Joe get out there yeah. and announce that he's running, it's a distraction from the candidates they really, really want to win. Because, you know, let's be honest, nobody in the Democratic Party wants Joe to run.
Right. Except Joe.
Yeah. It's kind of like House of Cards, if you guys are watching the current season of House of Cards. Spoiler alert. it's the same thing that, you know, Kevin Spacey's character, he's the president now in the third season. And he got there because he basically involved the sitting president in a scandal, and that president had to resign. And he was vice president at the time, so he's become president. But he didn't make any friends in the party by doing it that way. Yeah. And so they've already let him know that he's not the guy, yeah. right? They're not going to pick him as their candidate for the next election cycle. And so, but he still has every intention of running. I'm sure that goes on. Especially at the end of a two-term president where it's a free-for-all and, you know, both parties can...
So Bill Clinton didn't need any help with the scandals.
Yeah.
Yeah, he pretty much...
All he needed was an intern and a beret, and that was...
Some real estate.
We should go through all that stuff maybe on an episode.
I don't know.
The Vince Foster and the Whitewater.
A nostalgia episode.
Yeah.
All right, so there's one more topic here on the list there that I want to talk about, the bottom
okay.
one.
Okay.
But copyright. I don't care if we hit another one
we don't even have to talk about this. I'll just bring up net neutrality that recently
yeah.
it's been a big story. It's another one. I associate this somewhat to Obamacare. We got to pass it so we know what's in it.
Yeah, right.
They wouldn't release details on it. The chairman of the FCC was refusing to testify before Congress. He just, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
That's another play that I've seen in, call it the last decade, that people now just ignore it.
Right.
You know, before, it was like, well, they've called you to testify, so you have to.
Right. Otherwise, it's contempt, and you're going to
yes.
jail.
In the good old days of Ollie North, at least he sat there for a couple weeks saying, well, I can't recall, you know.
Right.
And my mom couldn't watch her soap operas and got all pissed off all the time. But, but now it's just, I'm not going to do that.
I'm not really feeling it.
Yeah. I lost my emails. I don't know. What? So, Rob's playing chess again. Sorry.
I'm reading the flood of Twitter responses to this podcast as it's running live.
Right. Yeah. I guess that was about all I had to say about net neutrality. I mean, apparently they finally released the details. It's like 300 and some pages of
seems like
whatever.
A good thing, though, right?
Well, it depends. I mean, it's easy to say we passed net neutrality and it not be actual net neutrality.
Yeah.
The devil's in the details, right?
Right.
So,
Rob, well just, how can you say...
I'll just wait until
this huge new law that we don't know what it's going to do. It's got to be a good thing, right?
Well, you know, it's the Obama administration. They wouldn't steer us wrong.
No, it's... It's probably fine. Before, all right, so the other quick hitter here, the return of the Cold War.
Yes.
I've had this theory for a while that Russia and the United States, and maybe even China too, are in on it. Like, look, this whole terrorism thing, this is way too expensive. We need to go back to the good old days of the Cold War. We had two major enemies, and everybody else just kind of fell in line behind that. And,
right.
You know, no big deal. So,
yeah, they did the Red Dawn remake too soon.
Exactly.
They should have waited a few more years for that one.
It's such a generational thing, I think, too, for our particular podcast presenters.
Yes.
You know, like playing GoldenEye in the sun, I mean, in the snow. You know, remember the snow scene? And you're going through, like the Russian base. And
I never played GoldenEye, but that's
it's fantastic. Yeah. Anyway, you know, fighting the Russians in the Siberian, you know, military base where they got the, you know, the GoldenEye laser that shoots down your satellite. Like, yes, you know, fighting the ISIS dude in a robe. Like, I'm not into it. Like, I don't like the optics. Give me some red dogs.
And I've got a few years on you guys, so you may not even remember duck and cover in school. I actually had to do that when I was in grade school. Like,
we did it for tornadoes, but not.
I think I
not
know.
No, these were air raid drills, like in second, third, fourth grade.
No, we didn't have
them. Yeah. Which, you know, at the time was ridiculous because.
That wasn't going to save you.
Right. Well, what kind of cover is my desk really going to provide if this is the big one? But, yeah, I mean, our generation has grown up with, you know, the Cold War being a much more real thing than the current generation, certainly. I mean, it's history now at this point.
Well, the current generation is the 9/11 generation.
Right. And so, yeah, to start seeing this dynamic shaping up again between, let's face it, the Soviet Union. I mean, that's what Putin represents, the Soviet Union, and the United States. It's a little disturbing.
It is.
Or awesome.
But one thing Rob inadvertently mentioned when he was talking about the GoldenEye game and the satellite, or, you know, the laser beam shooting down your satellite, one of the notes I have here on the return of the Cold War, NATO has formed this new rapid response unit specifically, it sounded like, because of what happened in Ukraine. And then the second piece of it, recently, some old U.S. weather satellite mysteriously had a temperature spike and then exploded. They didn't say where it was when this happened. The theory is China or Russia shot this thing, you know, they smoked it with a laser. Whether that was a space-borne weapon or ground-based, our speculation didn't get into that. Or maybe it was our own weapons test. But if it was, why would we say one of our satellites had a temperature spike and then blew up?
Well, because there's plenty of people tracking space junk, and there's going to be an increase.
Well, that make a good point there. But the speculation was this was a foreign entity blew up this satellite.
Right.
And beyond that, they were saying this is an act of war. I don't know if you can call
blowing up an obsolete 50-year-old weather satellite an act of war, but okay.
Still, it's our stuff, you know.
Right, right.
Somebody drives through my yard, even though the grass is dead. I'm still a little hacked off about it.
Sure.
You guys have a weird feeling when you look on Google Maps satellite. You know, the satellite view of Google Maps. But like that capability some years ago was probably the most, I mean, that could have been, if you could transport Google Maps back 30 years, 35 years, how much it would be worth, how classified it would be, you know, to have maps like that?
And then to think how much better what the military is currently using is to that, you know.
That, right.
If that's consumer-grade satellite imagery, exactly. What's the NRO using?
Yeah, every time I go to Google Maps and the satellite view, I'm like, oh yeah, you get this weird time warp. Like, I can't believe, not really technically that it's possible. Like, I understand the big servers and the satellites and whatever. Just like that data would have been just incredibly, you know, important and useful and expensive and classified.
Well, the mind-boggling thing to me is that the surveillance, the first generation of surveillance satellites actually used photographic film and dropped
it.
And then they had planes flying and grabbing it out of the air.
Hooks on them, right?
that's craziness.
What are we making? Nothing.
Nothing.
We're making apps and Tinder. Jeez, we suck.
Tinder, I don't know anything about that.
I don't know either. I'm a married man.
All right. So the last topic on your list is one that I have a I feel like I'm a stakeholder in just because of past conversations we've had here on the show.
Specifically why I put it there.
I know. Jeremy threw me a bone and gave me a topic I could get excited about. So you want to...
Well, there was some litigation recently between the producers of the song Blurred Lines and Marvin Gaye's estate.
Right.
That Blurred Lines is a ripoff. And the Marvin Gaye's estate won.
Right.
$7.5 million judgment. And they're trying to press it farther, saying no more sales, no more distribution of this song.
Yeah, it's a dangerous precedent. And it doesn't make any sense when you consider the history of music in this country. And you know, we were talking before about this. I'll put a link in the show notes to this documentary. It's called "Everything's a Remix," and it's a pretty compelling argument. I think it's only about a half an hour long, so it's something everybody could watch. And I'd encourage our listeners to check it out. But it's a pretty compelling argument about how our current state of thinking about intellectual property is only leading to stifle innovation in virtually every field, whether it's music or movies or books or software or whatever. We need to recognize that every new idea is based on old ideas. And when you attempt to sequester all of the old ideas and protect them in such a way that nobody else can use them, you're limiting the amount of progress you can make in all these different areas of technology and culture.
Disagree.
Oh, come on, Rob.
Capital D.
How can you disagree with that?
So you think somebody's going to rip off your little Joust game that won't load on my Android phone? Is that what this is about,
Rob? Wasn't that a remix, right? There's no Joust Adventure.
Yeah.
Get it on the Google Play Store now. there's no Joust Adventure without
Shameless
Joust.
Shameless plug
to the listener. There's no... Right. So I... But... All right. Let's get on in here. Because this is near and dear to my heart because as your humble Democrat on the podcast is also a game developer of the wonderful web game and on the Google Play Store for Android called Joust Adventure, which is an homage. I call it an homage and a reimagining of the arcade game Joust from the 70s,
and I think Robin Thicke would probably call his song an homage to Marvin Gaye.
The
but
fine
anyway,
line between
continue.
Homage and copy.
So what is the difference? What is the difference? So when you play the game, when you download it, the first thing you see is a 3D rendering of the old Joust logo with some added stuff. And then you see kind of a telling of the old Joust story, and then it's reimagined into the modern world where now you are the jouster in a 3D environment,
right,
where you now go face the pterodactyl that used to be 2D and go, wah, wah, you know, coming into your screen, and you can finally beat the pterodactyl. So that's the goal of Joust Adventure. So to me, as the developer, I feel like I'm taking that concept and pushing it to a new era. I didn't simply copy the game dynamics of Joust and then put it out as my own. So,
okay.
so but But as I submitted this game to various platforms, some said this contains copyright material. We can't look at it anymore because it contains copyright material. So that kind of frustrated me because I was like, yes, I'm using copyright material, but only in what I would term a free use way. Other sites like the Google Play Store have no trouble with putting it up on their site. They haven't heard a thing about it. And there's other sites. But what is frustrating is, so the game is free. I don't care about making money. I just want people to play it and enjoy it. That's all I care about. But something odd happened in that I put it up on a website called Kongregate with a K, and on the Google Play Store. From both platforms that I put it up on, it was copied, stolen, and disseminated around the world. I'm not exaggerating. So if you Google Joust Adventure, you will find one of the sites is in Portuguese. And I was like, oh, certainly this is just somebody took my description of the game, translated it into Portuguese, and put it on the website. So I took the Portuguese, which I had no idea what it was, and Google translated it, and it was a magical mystery. Like someone played through the game and wrote their own description in Portuguese because the Google Translate did not match what I wrote. So, like,
well,
how did they grab...
You can't rely on Google Translate.
Well, maybe Google Translate. Right. But somehow somebody grabbed my file and sent it around the world. So I have no idea exactly how many people have played this game. There's a site called Y8.com. It's got 2,000 hits. Is it really 2,000 hits? Or do they just say it's got 2,000 hits so people want to play it? I don't know. How did it even get on Y8.com? I didn't put it there. And even the Android app, if you Google Joust Adventure Android, you'll see the Google Play hit. You'll see 16 other hits of people who have somehow found my binary and are posting it. So if I wanted to make money on that, I mean, it took me years to create this little thing. It's my ideas, my codes, my textures, my models, my everything, my music, the whole thing. Somebody could just take it, put it on their site, and make money off of what I did. Like, hey, easy there, Tiger. So this whole thing is a little bit of a copyright fertile ground here because I'm obviously leveraging on work that others have created.
So,
but I don't want people stealing my stuff.
I would say that you have learned a valuable lesson that the world in which we live today can no longer support this antiquated legislation that we call copyright law.
But how do I keep my product my own?
I don't know.
Wait,
you need
minute.
To come up with a new business what? Model or whatever to recognize this new reality that we live in. All right?
I thought the Google Play Store would get that for me.
Why isn't the Portuguese version an homage to the Rob Heather version?
Because it's just a copy. Which is exactly what we're talking about here with this Marvin Gaye thing. They didn't take and extend my thing. They didn't add four levels. What they did is they took my stuff that took me 2 years to create and they copied it and made it their own. That's what's called a copyright violation. By the way, I got this new novel I wrote. It's called The St. Louisiners. You know, it's all about people. It's just like Dublin, but it's a little bit different. It's like a collection of short stories. I think you should check it out. You know, I mean... There's sampling, and as a rap fan, Jerry also a fan of rap, not so much Jerry,
yeah,
I don't think.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, I have a couple of Public Enemy CDs.
I mean, there's something about...
Run DMC.
There's something about sampling something, giving credit to sampling it, and extending it in a way that's not been seen before, versus just, like, singing different lyrics over a song that somebody else did, and then claiming it as your own. Right? Am I going crazy here?
I don't think they just... But that's the...
I think, like I just said, this is the new reality. And to cling to the old reality makes you a dinosaur.
But what do we do? What do we do? I don't hold... I don't know
what we do. But I know that what we used to do can't work anymore.
I mean,
so we got to stop thinking in those terms. We got to think about new ways. If you want to create content... And profit from it, you have to come up with a different way of doing it because the old ways don't work anymore.
Do we need some kind of like public-private key site locking kind of mechanism so that
maybe.
So that if I'm the developer, I put it up on a site, you can get it from that site. Yes, you can copy that binary. You know, it downloads on whatever. You can download it and then publish it. But when other people downloaded it from that site, it's not going to work. I mean, is that what we need?
Maybe, or maybe we just need to go to an updated version of the patronage model that was used back in the Renaissance. If you wanted to be a painter back during the Renaissance, you had to find a patron. You had to find somebody who was willing to subsidize you, pay your living expenses, so that you could spend your days painting stuff for them. And then those paintings were used to decorate their homes.
How does that relate to the
modern?
Their
friends' homes. And
how does it relate to the modern era? Now the patron pays me all that stuff. I create a great painting, and they photocopy it and put it as a poster on their college dorm room. Right? No. Raises another question.
Or maybe you need to go to micropayments. You know, and the people that want to play your game have to pay half a cent to play it.
They're going
to
pay whoever stole it, though, in your world, right? It's just content. So if somebody wants to steal it, post it as their own, and charge a half cent, they get their half cent.
If you can come up with a way, now, granted, the architecture of the web is not set up to protect content
right. By
default.
Right.
But if you can come up with a way to deliver your content via the web and still protect it in such a way that only the people that pay can play it,
yeah.
Then, you know, I think you've solved the problem
maybe
to
Apple
a large extent.
Better. Yeah, it's been a very interesting adventure, so to speak. Hey,
all right, we finally have a
hi there
person on the street. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm Jeremy. This is Rob. This is Jerry.
Rob, Jerry. I'm Ellen.
Hi, Ellen.
Ellen.
Nice to meet you. Ellen. If you wouldn't mind.
Here's a question for you.
So we'll ask you a question. You get to say whatever you want to say about it.
Or you don't even have to talk about that at all. You have anything else you want to talk about?
Current events?
Are you guys hard up for speakers?
I wouldn't say we're hard up. That feels a little sad.
A little harsh, Ellen. A little bit harsh.
Sorry, guys.
All right, so the overall scoop, we do this little podcast. We do it once a month. Here's our little card. We're the Midwest Peace Process because we bring peace. But one of us is an anarchist, one of us is liberal, and one of us is a conservative. And we talk about issues of the day, and we try to come to some consensus, and we never do. But we also ask various, you know, people on the street for their thoughts and opinions. So if you would like to contribute, you can. And so we usually have a question. Today's kind of the current events episode. But one of us on the panel absolutely can't stand daylight savings time. Believe
Why?
It or not, it's the anarchist. Because daylight saving time is just some kind of like government construct that somebody decided on this day we'll turn our clocks, and this other day we'll turn them back. It has no meaning. It has no natural meaning with the way the seasons work.
Do you know what I don't get about the whole thing is how different like Arizona is.
Right.
Daylight
and Indiana.
Yeah, I was just going to say Indiana. I just don't get that.
They just get to opt out.
Yeah.
Right. But it's kind of, doesn't it show you kind of this?
By choice?
Right.
Are they forced?
Right, and how silly the whole thing is. Right. Like, oh, let's all move our clocks ahead. Why?
So what are your feelings on
oh, I don't
switching
care.
Our clocks back and forth?
I
you don't care?
No, it doesn't bother me. I don't really have as much thought about it as you guys do.
You never wondered about
week?
Why we do it?
It's been a long week. It's my birthday on Tuesday.
Oh, happy
I
birthday.
I wonder why.
Do you just do it because the government tells you to do it?
No, I think it has something to do with our universe and the way the Earth rotates, and I feel like it's all part of the circle.
The circle of life?
Yeah.
Hakuna Matata.
Exactly.
All right, fair enough.
You've been doing this for a long time, haven't you?
I like that it's a little gift it gives me in the spring. Like, because
right.
I get home after work, and now I can play with my kids.
It's,
outside, but it is so, to me, it's so artificial and silly.
It's you know. The same gift as your tax refund, right?
It was already yours. They took it from you, and then they're pretending to give it back.
Only the right. government can cut a foot off the top of your blanket and sew it onto the bottom of your blanket and expect it to be a longer blanket.
It's how
a longer
long blanket. Have you guys been doing this?
A couple years.
Yeah. Like just like an hour tonight. We haven't been here that long.
Since last Tuesday.
What's your favorite topic? Politics.
All right. See you guys.
Yeah, yeah, it was good talking to you.
Good thoughts.
So I think, Rob, you need to read or you need to watch Everything as a Remix.
I do need to.
Invest a half an hour and watch it because it is at least watch. There's four segments. Watch the fourth segment.
I'll watch.
Because it addresses the exact point you were making earlier about how, right, you know, you took an old game, right, and built on it. And you know, they give several examples within music, within literature, within movies that have taken what's old and made it new.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, copyright is intended to prevent that.
That's
so. All right, we're gonna take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll dive into a little listener feedback. So stay with us. We are back once again. Our listener, Eric, had some comments after our last episode where we were talking primarily about vaccinations, whether or not the government had the authority to force parents to vaccinate. And to Eric's credit, he did make... Let me see if I can find it here. Oh, yeah. So to his credit, Eric says his position is, I don't think you can pass a law that forces parents to vaccinate their kids. However, I have no problem with saying kids that aren't vaccinated can't go to public schools or people that aren't vaccinated can't get certain jobs. I have to believe Jerry and Jeremy are okay with that, too. That's the free market at work, right? Yeah, I mean, but, to a large extent, I would agree.
I don't know where you draw the line. That's where I have the problem. Like I was saying, when Rob was saying, well, I listen to what my doctor says and whatever they recommend. Well, what if they recommend everything? When do you start saying, whoa, this doctor might be a quack, and I need to start looking into this on my own? Or, wait a minute, your restrictions on saying I can't have this job because I don't have this vaccine, that's too restrictive. I don't know where you draw the line, and that's the problem I have.
I don't have a problem with that line. I mean, the company gets to decide who they're going to hire and who they're not going to hire. And if that's one of the criteria that, hey, to work here, you have to have all your shots. And to have some proof that you've had all your shots.
But that's what I'm saying. How do you determine what all of your shots mean?
I don't know. That's the company's prerogative.
Okay. That's a pretty wide range.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a cost-benefit analysis they have to do there. They have to say, well, we've determined that, you know, there are 10 diseases that cost our company a lot more money every year than the rest, and if you're not vaccinated against those, you can't work here because we consider you a risk.
All right.
I mean, I think a company has a right to say that.
A company, but what about a government entity? I mean, those are two very different things.
Well, so when you talk about a government entity, then it's the gun in the room, right?
And when does that gun become oppressive?
As soon as it's referenced. I mean, as soon as you pass a law that says you have to have all of these vaccinations, or you can't function in society. You can't go to school, you can't buy and sell, whatever the restriction is, at that point, it's the gun in the room. You're saying, you know, there's an implied use of deadly force if you do not comply. Now, no company has that right, right? The only leverage they have on you is they're not going to hire you.
Right.
And then it's your choice. You can choose not to work there,
right,
or you can choose to get the vaccinations and take the job. And there's no gun, right?
Theoretically.
Well, okay. Now, when the corporations and the government are in collusion, or when the line between them is blurred in some way, then I agree with you. But
okay.
Anyway, to move on here, Eric... So Eric said that, but then he also quoted me when I said, if you're not getting vaccinated, who are you harming besides yourself? And Eric says, well, start with the people that don't have 100% immunity from the vaccine, then throw in the cases where kids have impaired immune systems from chemotherapy, for example, and can't get vaccinated. Finally, add in the infants who are too young to get vaccinated. I think that adds up to a pretty good number of people. Okay, fair enough. But, I don't disagree with what he said. But if you're a parent of a child with a compromised immune system, you have to take certain precautions. And you can't force other people to take those precautions for you.
But that, we are doing that now.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing I object to.
Yes.
So it's like the saying, you know, you can't child-proof the world, so you got to world-proof your child. You know, that's the way I approach it.
I think we're losing that approach.
Yes, we are.
And
I agree.
It's costing, I don't know, well, I don't know what it's costing, but more than...
So another comment that Eric made that I wanted to respond to was, he said, well, he quotes me again when I mentioned Rosa Parks, and I said that's something that everyone agrees now was wrong. Eric says, I think now is the key word. Times change, and our definition of what's morally right and wrong changed too. 150 years ago, the majority believed women shouldn't vote. The initial constitution for Oregon said blacks weren't allowed to live there. In hindsight, these are morally repulsive concepts, who knows 100 years from now what people will look back on with contempt. Can you believe they actually killed sentient animals for food or even sport? I don't believe morality is as set and firm as you'd like it to be. All I have to say to that is if morality is defined by whatever the majority says it is, I don't want to live in that world.
No.
So there needs to be some higher standard. Beyond just what majority says morality is.
I guess you guys are missing each other. Speak for listener. You know, I don't think he's saying that it's set by the majority, but he's also not saying that there's some universal truth that we all agree with that 200, 400 years from now is going to be the same truth.
If morality is not fixed, and that's what he's saying, that morality changes over time, then who gets to decide what it is? If it's not a universal truth, if it's not something that I can discover within my lifetime...
Well, the government operates on a majority. That's one of the...
Okay, but the government and morality are two totally different things.
Exactly. Usually, so yeah. I don't think you should equate morality judgments with majorities.
Well, that's what he's doing.
I don't think so. I think he's just...
He's giving these examples. The majority believed women shouldn't vote. Now, today we believe that was morally wrong.
Right.
It was morally wrong then, too. It's just the majority was controlling the laws that said it was okay at the time. The morality didn't change. The laws changed.
So what... But...
And that's the fundamental problem with democracy, right? Is that 51% can oppress the 49% if they just pass a law that says it's okay to do that.
Yeah, it doesn't mean
it's morally right.
I get that. This is a topic for a future show.
Yeah. All right. I think we're probably done.
I think we were done a while ago. Yeah, I just want to bring up one headline.
Okay.
Two, actually. Why would GOP candidate for Missouri Governor Tom Schweik kill himself?
Yeah.
Story's been kind of here and there. And I've heard, somebody misrepresented his religion.
Yes.
Wow, that's a reason to kill yourself? Because somebody claimed you were Jewish?
Yeah,
I mean, are you kidding? It seems like
I
would hope not, because if you think that's so horrible to kill yourself over, you have bigger problems, and you shouldn't be representing the populace.
Right. So yeah. as someone, right. So I often think about this because anytime I get a chance to talk about my favorite author, David Foster Wallace, author who's ever been, who has ever lived and has created the greatest novel ever created, Infinite Jest, who also killed himself at the age of 46. Thinking a lot about this is like depression and those thoughts are a sickness like any other sickness. And there are certain things that can exacerbate it or inflame it or, make it better or worse. But if you're willing to do that, then there's nothing really that can... The root cause is something deeper than whatever is...
Okay, let's say that. Let's not say, this guy... said he was this, so therefore that guy made him kill himself.
Right. I mean, I think it's bemoaning maybe the state of politics and maybe that's no different than it's always been.
They're talking about this Hancock guy. They need to take him off the air because he said that. Off, was it KMOX that has a show on?
Right. Does he have a show?
Yeah, I think.
Okay. And there's been ads that have been real negative, but that's to me that's politics, and it's garbage and it's gross, and that's what politics is garbage and gross, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding of that people commit suicide because they're sad or because something bad happened. Like, depression isn't sadness, depression's an illness, and when that happens, it's that illness that's
taken hold. You know, you can have environmental factors that make things worse. You know, if you have emphysema and you go to China, it's going to make it worse, but you still have emphysema, right? So you have a root cause illness that's, yeah, so I agree.
Second headline. Killer asked for more prison time, says plea deal too lenient. Killer is a little bit, not sure that's the right way to describe it. It was a youngish guy, or mid-20s, had a criminal record. He had been in and out of rehab kind of thing. I believe he stole a car. He was running from the cops, crashed into a car driven by this 70-some-year-old librarian that was really popular in this small town. He was given this plea deal. He was given, like, 2 years in prison and probation. He refused that, said, I need more prison time. His sister said, he needs more prison time. He's sick. You know, this drug addiction is ruining him. He doesn't have a handle on it. He killed this lady. He needs to pay for that. He was saying the same thing. That was glorious to me, that somebody could recognize that in themselves. Somebody's family member could recognize that situation and say, no, this is wrong. He did wrong. And I'm going to tie this back to Ferguson a little bit, because there's been very little admitting that one of the people, one of the main figures in this, had a hand in the wrongdoing. And I would appreciate if more people would own up to any wrongdoing they may have committed. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay.
And like that guy in the hooded sweatshirt.
Okay. I just have two headlines that I'm going to refer to here. Required reading for all our listeners. The first is The Obviousness of Anarchy. And the other one is The Anarchist Republic of Caspea, which was an interesting read, because when you guys are always asking me for examples of anarchy throughout history, and I'm always referring to the Icelandic Free State,
yes,
I now have another example to point to. So,
okay.
One that I was not previously aware of.
Say that again, I wasn't listening.
I don't know, I don't remember.
All right. I've been to Iceland, you know.
Yeah. All right, I want to thank all of our listeners. I want to thank the folks who stopped and talked to us tonight. I want to thank GC for hosting us once again.
Still never giving us any free beer.
No free beer yet, damn it. All right.
I thank Rob.
Can you send him a tweet?
I think a tweet. Wearing out the battery in his phone by being on his phone.
Making some bad chess moves during the last section.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.